We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to Inside Mizzou Athletics, presented by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. Now, here is your host, Mike Kelly.
I'm Mike Kelly. Matt Michaels is alongside. This is the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast, brought to you each and every week by our friends at Shelter Insurance. Make sure you check out Shelter Insurance because their auto policy now includes roadside assistance. You can learn more at shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield, we're your shelter. And we also invite you to tell a friend about the podcast and also subscribe to it. You have all the details on how one subscribes. You keep using words that I'm not familiar with, so just
it should be pretty popular, right? I mean, right there, if you're in the player, there's a subscribe list, there's a download list,
so
if you want to.
Player.
You see those
subscribe.
You see those three little circles? You could put it in your RSS feed. Yeah.
Ooh, your RSS feed. See, now you've
Apple Podcasts, all the rest. Wow. Yeah, we're everywhere. We're nationwide, Mike.
Yeah, so is COVID. Have you noticed?
I've noticed this week, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so the news unfolds Monday afternoon. I woke up literally before 5 o'clock on Monday, and I, not to brag, but that's just kind of when you're old, it's hard to sleep. I opened up the Tennessean newspaper. The headline in the Tennessean was, COVID could force the postponement of the Missouri-Vanderbilt game. That was at like 4:45 Monday morning. Hmm. So what do? Well, because I know they're sleeping, I immediately take the screenshot of that and text it to Chris and to Howard just to make sure that, you know, they know as well. And then, you know, I guess it was probably about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I was in a meeting and got a couple of calls you know, December the 12th, here we are, looking at the playing of the Missouri-Vanderbilt game. But, you know, man, I don't know how you feel about this, but I'm just thinking about just how it attacks different – how it's impacted different teams. And we've seen other postponements and cancellations. We've seen, you know, Baylor shut down operations, and they think that they may have gotten a test from a false negative test, and then it was on somebody that was on one of their road trips that then spread it to multiple people in close contact. Vanderbilt had – they were down to 56 guys a week ago at South Carolina. And the – we all know that the minimum is 53, and so now they've fallen below that, and it's – you know, you just think about, you know, the health and welfare of all the student athletes. And, you know, you knew this was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I think both of us did not want Missouri to be associated with that first game that's canceled in the SEC.
Yeah, you never want to see it for the student athletes that have worked so hard on Missouri's side, and especially with a head of steam going into a homecoming week on top of that and all the festivities that fans and alums will want to come back for and enjoy, even if it's from far away, right? You want to have a game at the end of that week. And Missouri doesn't get to, and it's for the right reasons. I mean, if Vanderbilt doesn't have 53 scholarship players, I mean, we've seen what's happened to them on the field the last couple of weeks. They've taken it on the chin. South Carolina ran all over the Commodores. And I'm not saying that what happened on the field of play impacts what happens off the field of play when it comes to contact tracing. All that stuff's in the hand of the health experts. But seeing the way the wind was blowing there for Derek Mason's program, don't even force it. You know, don't try to push it. If you are around that number and it's critical and you dip beneath it, there's not a reason to really play the game there. And I understand why it's happening the way it is.
It's intriguing that you use the word, the way the winds are blowing towards Derek Mason's program. Here's a guy who is roughly 20 games under the 500 mark, who's taken his team to two bowls during his tenure. Who is operating under really a new structure at Vanderbilt, right?
Yeah.
So they've basically taken the athletic department and brought it within the confines of the university, so it answers directly to campus leadership. The athletic director is new. You begin to wonder a little bit about, okay, how is Derek Mason's leadership going to be viewed? Based on not only the results or lack thereof on the football field, but also because of the number of cases that have come up in his program. And again, we both know the virus has no boundaries, right? It can impact anyone. However, you wonder how responsible off the field and outside of the facilities individuals are being in Nashville, Tennessee.
Well,
is that fair?
Well, folks are always going to ask the question. I think it's a very fine edge between being irresponsible, or in some person's view, being irresponsible might be another person's not. I mean, that's just kind of the world we're living in 2020. Everybody has their own comfort level, right? But I do think that you make a good point, and that is the way programs come through this can impact how people are viewed at the top. And I'm not one to say whether that's fair to them or not, but I deal in reality. And the reality is, you're absolutely right. Could some people be looking at Vanderbilt right now and saying, man, that program's in a bad place? Sure, somebody could. I think they're fighting through it the best they can right now, and we'd certainly wish for the good health of everybody coming out of it. But they also had, Mike, a lot of opt-outs already due to the coronavirus. They already had a scholarship number that, in effect, was synthetically reduced, right? Because there were student-athletes that said, no, I'm going to sit this one out, maybe come back next year, maybe do something else. So you already have a smaller pool to work from. So if the virus gets within your team and it spreads one way or the other, however it happens, right? Like, it's you almost contact trace to make sure that people are safe, but you don't do it to say, all right, we got to point the finger here. In the end, if you get sick, you get sick.
I think Jim Sterk also has he's been very principled in his approach to the way that his department, his football program, and ultimately he oversees it as the director of athletics, is abiding by what they believe the proper way to not only test and also to report, but also to hold kids out because of contact tracing and things like that. And what we've learned, if anything, through the first 3 weeks of the schedule in the Southeastern Conference, in that regard, it's not exactly an even playing field, because others are not abiding by the same type of protocols, if you will.
I think it shows itself, Mike, and I agree with you, in how Missouri's handling fans at Memorial Stadium. It's very clear that there is to be distance and space and a reduced capacity that leads to everybody spreading out. Mm-hmm. Enjoy the game from your own space. And I think that Missouri fans, to their credit, have engaged in that, you know, and have respected that's the rule, the way things are going. There are some other institutions across the Southeastern Conference and across other conferences that have decided to do it other ways. And all you need to do is look into a stand and see if somebody's shoulder to shoulder with somebody else, and you know the answer to that.
Well, a couple venues stand out, right? I mean, Vaught-Hemingway Stadium in Oxford, Mississippi this last Saturday evening, you know, in the shootout against Alabama. We're going to talk more about that a little bit later. Kyle Field at Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you didn't see a lot of social distancing there, at least shots you saw that we were privy to from the from the television camera, so that makes you wonder. But, you know, that takes me to another topic, and we're going to get to Missouri and LSU and the terrific win on this past weekend. But could you hear a more irresponsible voice in college football this past weekend than that of Florida head coach Dan Mullen, who, after his defense was not able to stop Texas A&M, his message afterwards was how they need to pack the swamp with 90,000 people to be able to give them a home field advantage. Is there not a more irresponsible voice in college football this week?
I think it was a mistake to say. I don't know whether Dan Mullen...
He doubled down on it on Monday even.
I didn't even really see that. I didn't see that he doubled down on it on Monday. I understand. All right. Everybody wants things to be normal or more normal. And you want to have fans in the stands and you want to have 90,000. Who wouldn't want?
Absolutely.
Why wouldn't Dan Mullen want it?
Yeah.
But to say that right now is something that is outside of the bounds of reality and outside of the bounds of public health. It just is. And then it forces Florida's administration, of course, to come out and say, well, we're not really going to have 90,000 fans in the swamp for our next home game. So, I didn't notice the doubling down on it from Mullen, which makes it a little bit different.
And maybe it was over the weekend. Maybe it was over the weekend, because I'm trying to remember exactly, because you see so many headlines throughout the course of the day. Maybe on Monday, maybe when he was asked about it Monday, maybe he didn't answer the question. He was asked about it. Maybe it was the weekend. But still, nonetheless.
Well, I would agree that's frustrating, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's frustrating to see that, yes, you can have a variance of opinion. You can have different ways to handle it, but in the end, you feel kind of frustrated because there's some places that are handling it in a more conservative route when it comes to the way the virus is handled, and let's take as many precautions as we can. And other places seem to be, I don't know, a little bit more lax or slipping away from that.
Don't you think Kiff would have loved to have, you know, a full complement of fans for that shootout in Oxford on Saturday night?
Sure.
Don't you think that Saban would love to have 104,000 in Bryant-Denny this weekend when Georgia comes to town?
And they'd have them this
weekend. And don't you think that Drink would allow to have maybe 50,000 to 65,000 people inside Memorial Stadium to see his first victory as Missouri's head coach? I mean, it's just – but we're all operating under the confines of safety and hopefully being reasonable, which I think most people are. But I just I was amazed when I read that quote and then saw it from Dan Mullen over the weekend. What a terrific game by Missouri on Saturday against LSU, finding a way to win. I looked at Howard Richards literally during the first quarter. I said, Missouri can beat this team. There's no question. And the thing, Matt, that to me spoke volumes of the growth that I think I've seen in a short amount of time is really that number one core value that Eli Drinkwitz brought to this program: always compete. And that was a football team that, no matter the situation, competed for 60 minutes against LSU and found a way to win.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it was telling that after the game against Tennessee, it was, well, we want to always compete, but we need to have execution. We need to have
Correct.
Results. And we've talked about that. And the execution was absolutely there offensively and in the key moments defensively against LSU. I don't know if it was in the first half when I thought Missouri can absolutely win this game, but I knew early on, like you did, that Missouri was not outmatched by LSU, that its offensive line was getting some of what it wanted in the run game, and it bears itself in the numbers, which we can go into if we want to in a little bit. I just knew from the early stages that Missouri, if it kept competing, was going to have an opportunity against the defending national champions. And then at the end, despite some issues in the game with turnovers, despite some issues covering Terrace Marshall, who I think is an absolute stud, you still won the game, and you were the better team. Missouri was the better team than LSU on Saturday.
Lamar Chase opts out. I try not to talk about kids that opt out because they're not here, right? But Lamar Chase opts out, and so now Terrace Marshall becomes their number one target. And wow, what a unbelievable talent that young man is. Probably went to the well a little bit too often down the stretch. Goal line stand was phenomenal. The first two stops and ball basically never moved. Third down, you know, they try to pitch it out in the left flat. Nick Bolton makes a great play. I'm thinking to myself, man, he was there to bat it down. Just if you catch it, it's a pick six, right? But, you know, instinctively it's to bat the ball down. Let's play for the fourth down. And then on fourth down, an unbelievable read by Josh Bledsoe. The thing that surprised me is that they never tried a quarterback sneak with Miles Brennan.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised by that.
Well, maybe they knew they didn't have Tennessee's offensive line.
Well, maybe they knew that the kid, you know, he's kind of a spindly guy, right? At 6'4", you know, one or maybe 215 pounds, I don't know. So,
yeah, not necessarily rush forward.
But I don't want to take away. That just kind of caught me off guard. Mm-hmm. But the resilience that you saw on the defensive side of the ball, the innovative playmaking and calling that you saw on the offensive side of the ball. Man, I've been in that stadium when Larry Smith opted to punt in a close game against Michigan State when you had him on the ropes. I've been in that stadium when there were other conservative play calls made that might have changed, you know, if you're a little bit more aggressive, might have changed the structure or the outcome. To me, the message that I love most from Eli Drinkwitz was the first one that he sent. We're going to take the ball, and we're going to go score. And they came up with a play with the flea flicker to score, and, you know, it was like, okay, here we go. Let's play, boys.
Yeah, let's go out there and get them. And I think a lot of credit needs to be given to Missouri's wide receiving core on Saturday. I mean, you see it from the first play with Toski Dove. He gets underneath it and makes a good adjustment to the ball, by the way, kind of backpedals a little bit and lets a couple of LSU defenders run into each other. And you see that and you say, all right, fine. But as the game went on, I thought there was a stretch at the end of the first quarter where maybe it was, okay, let's settle in a little bit and do our thing and give LSU the credit it deserves. And eventually, I think Eli Drinkwitz realized, nah, man, we can get this all day long.
You know, the great thing about football, and in my mind, and you've heard me say this a million times, it's the greatest team sport that there is. But the other thing, too, is that you can't rely on who's not there, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, nobody cares. Nobody cares you had seven guys out. Certainly LSU didn't care.
Right.
They looked at it as an opportunity. So what do you do? You know, you slide one guy to the side, you move a guy up. And think about those guys that got that opportunity in the game. You mentioned Toski Dove. Had more receptions in that game than combined Hazleton and Chisholm have had. You know, I mean, it's been phenomenal to watch that unfold. Boo Smith.
Yes.
Who heard about Boo Smith? I mean, I'm watching this little skinny kid run around a camp, number 31. Who in the heck is this guy? Turns out, pretty good player. You know, guy that walks on. You know, I think about the defensive side of the football, and yeah, you didn't have Darius Robinson. You didn't have Kobe Whiteside. You didn't have Akil Byers. But Isaiah McGuire moves from defensive end at 6'5 and 280 pounds inside to tackle and ends up having a great game. He got an opportunity. He made the most of it. I mean, it's that, I think, goes back to, again, the core principles that you're trying to build within this program. When the opportunity presents itself, take advantage of it.
Well, and it builds depth, too. Yeah. It shows players. I've always been a proponent of this in sports, Mike. And the more that you rely on everybody you have, the more you build your team. Mm-hmm. Because you're telling the person who is at the end of the bench, you're telling the third and fourth stringer, your time may come, you need to be ready. But if you don't offer that opportunity at some point, then you kind of rob yourself a chance to get that guy ready or that girl ready. And I think the more you do it and you say, I trust you to do your job, you get better success out of it. And Eli Drinkwitz, I think he kind of said that on Paul Feinbaum's show on Monday, because he was interviewed about the big win. He said, when you set the expectation, people rise to that expectation. When you hope for something to happen, you're looking for the other guy to lose.
The you know, the offensive line played extremely well. Obviously, the kid taking the snaps was really good in his second career start. Now, had time, you know, but still the thing that amazes me, and we saw it at Tennessee, and we saw it certainly against LSU, is that when the play busts, he still knows where to go with the football, and he does it with poise and composure. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to teach, you know. To me, that's an inherent thing Finkel used to use the phrase the it factor. And I think we're starting to see something with Connor Bazelak. I think it's the it factor.
Yeah.
I really do.
It very well can be. There's going to be other games for us to hold up at the end of the season that's not just this LSU game. But if this is the finest, I mean, it shows you where he can be. The completion percentage is out of this world. Making throws that are difficult to make under pressure, with composure. And maybe the best throw of the whole afternoon was that back shoulder fade on the sideline to Bruce Smith.
No question.
I mean, that is an elite level throw. That's the type of stuff we saw Drew Locke doing in Missouri's offense. That's the type of stuff they look at the next level and say, oh, you can do that? All right, you can play here.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that, and we talked about this last week, but one of the things that convinced me, you know, when I was evaluating quarterbacks a year ago about his arm talent was that they were running a drill with the quarterbacks where literally you fake the stretch play to the left, then bootleg back to the right, and as you're rolling back to the right side, you're throwing about a 20 to 25 yard out on the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching Kelly Bryant, and I was watching Sean Robinson, and I was watching Taylor Powell, and the other quarterbacks, and they all had to do this. They all had to load up, right? They all had to load it up and maybe put a little bit on that back foot just to get the ball there. Connor Bazelak, he does it, and it's like, boom, forearm wrist action. It's there, you know? And I'm like, wow, that's a live arm. And then you saw that back shoulder fade. More evidence of just the arm talent that this kid has. Mm-hmm. The throw to Michael Wilson, I mean, just absolutely laid out there perfectly. The throw to Dove, you know, maybe he had to wait on it just a little bit, but still. It's and he's going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. We all know that, right? You know, the game is still probably a little faster than it's going to eventually become for him. But what a coming out party. I mean, yeah. It was just neat to watch.
Yeah, it was fascinating to see that it just continued to build upon itself. And with putting players in the right situations to make plays, too. I think of the two catches Nico Hay made in the game, mm-hmm. and think they might have been the two most important plays of the game for Missouri.
Yeah.
Not just because they take the lead on one, but because the third down, little Andy Reid homage, smoked sausage light to Nico Hay on the shovel pass inside. That leads directly to a first down touchdown with Jalen Knox on the very next play. If those two plays don't happen, the game's completely different.
Chance Looper.
Oh, yeah.
First snap of the season, you know, and you know, here's they sneak 18 on, you know, and it results in the longest completion of the game. So just guys taking advantage of making plays. One of the things that I kept thinking about as the game unfolded was, you know, Bo Pelini's been in this position before, where he's been on that opposite sideline and gotten torched by Missouri when he was the head coach at Nebraska. You're paying a lot of money as the defending national champion to a restructured staff with Bo Pelini making about $2.3 million as your defensive coordinator, okay? Dave Aranda, I think we saw that, and yeah, he different talent from a year ago, but it's clear that maybe there's too much going on there in terms of what they're presenting these kids and trying to do from a defensive standpoint. And isn't it amazing how the winds, you know, the breezes change, right? You know, you had the 60 minutes interview with Coach O and, you know, all this nonsense and, you know, building up and building up. And now the people in Baton Rouge are losing their mind,
mm-hmm.
you know, giving up 96 points in three games, right?
Yeah.
And guess what? They're going to give up a lot more this weekend against Florida. That's going to be kind of a fascinating situation to watch unfold.
I think it's a new trend across the SEC, and it's going to be interesting to see which fan bases handle it in a manner in which they say, hey, listen, nobody's playing defense in this league right now, right? Except for Georgia. Or are they going to handle it saying, man, we don't have it right now, so let's freak out. I think that there might be some who say, okay, this is just the way it's going. It's a natural progression. There's a lot more offense in this league. But I do think that means that what Missouri did on Saturday should be commended. And I think they did it on the SEC network where they said, hey, nobody else in this league was getting stops. Missouri made four goal line stops. They got a blocked field goal. Mm-hmm. Missouri made the plays necessary in the game to win it defensively. And there are some teams across the league, and even against Ole Miss at times, Alabama looked like a team that couldn't stop it. All right, that's Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
You make enough stops, you give your offense a chance, you've got a better chance than most years to win in this league.
Watching that game on Saturday evening, the Alabama-Ole Miss game, you knew that if Bama could just get one stop and get it from going back and forth to just a seven-point lead to get a double-digit lead, that it was probably going to be over. Mm-hmm. And certainly that's what happened when they held the Rebels to a field goal. But let's talk about something else. I mean, this past weekend, to build off of your point, I think it was the highest average point totals across the board in the SEC, point average, that we've seen in the league ever,
mm-hmm.
okay? in this COVID era, where you had no spring football, where you had limitations during the course of fall camp, why are we seeing such an outburst of offense and defenses struggling?
Yeah.
You would think without spring ball and without it, you know, the full complement of practices, you know, where execution is so key on the offensive side, you would think that it'd be the opposite. But the offenses are the ones that are taking center stage right now. I'm just curious what you think.
Yeah, I've thought about that a little bit. And the best answer I can come up with right now, Mike, is you have a lot of young talent that's run a lot of better offense in high school. They come in more prepared. And certainly you can't say that there are freshmen across the country that come right into programs everywhere and make immediate impacts. But they do understand some of the concepts. If the spread is what college football offense is in some form or fashion, well, high schools everywhere across the country run spread. Some of the most successful high school offenses in the country run spread. So you don't have to teach it. They know you can put more advanced concepts on. It's more about the timing. I mean, there's a whole generation. I'm not going to say this is the reason, Mike, but man, all these kids are playing Madden when they're growing up, right? They understand maybe a little bit more about what offense is. It's possible. I'm not saying it's going to be the only thing, but I think there's a greater understanding of what offense is and can be from the players who play it, and the quarterbacks are better, and they make fewer mistakes.
Funny thing is those that are playing Madden, do they even know who he was or who he is?
That's a really good question.
Not. Yeah, you know, oh man, who the hell was he? You know, you think about that. It's just it's fascinating. All of a sudden, the sun has not been shining on the Pirate in Starkville, has it? Manages just 2 points against Kentucky.
Now that was the
five
weirdo
interceptions.
That was the weirdo result of the entire weekend.
Wow.
I mean, and tells you
and
how
then,
quickly
and
things
then calls
can turn.
Out like he did at Washington State, calls out his roster afterwards.
Yeah, and I mean, I've got some thoughts about that one. But
well, we're delighted to hear them.
I mean, listen, you can't do it every single time something goes wrong. You can't say you're not buying into my program every single time something does not go right. It maybe it's a defense mechanism. I understand. Mike Leach's offense, when it works well, it works very, very well. We saw that 2 weeks ago. So now 2 weeks later, there are people who aren't on the program and not following along or whatever. They're still college athletes. They're not professional athletes. I wish you had professional athletes to run the offense because I'd love to see what it looks like. But they're not. They make mistakes. They're imperfect. They can be fooled sometimes. It just doesn't make sense to have that be a hallmark of what happens. And I guess we're used to it by now who cover college football, but I don't like the look. I think it probably turns more players off than it turns on in the long run. And we'll see how it goes for them going the rest of the season.
I heard a great line this weekend about the amount of scoring and how, you know, the SEC looked like the Big 12. And then somebody said, yeah, but the SEC wins championships. I thought that was a pretty good line. You didn't give it much of a response.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind that it looks like the Big 12, Mike.
You like the points.
I'm fine with the points. I love the defense, okay? But I remember, what was it, Alabama-LSU, was it 2011? That game that just had field goals and with this big defensive struggle, and this is what football is. And I'm thinking, well, a lot of fans outside of the Southeastern Conference, nah, not really. They do like to see offense. They do like to see points. But they like to see big defensive plays. I think that fans just want to see competitive games. And if offense is the way teams are being most competitive right now, so be it.
Yeah. Need to see, again, teams finding ways to win, and certainly the way that Missouri did. So, you know, I thought coming into this week that this was prior to the cancellation or the postponement, that this was going to be a really important week for Eli Drinkwitz and his coaching staff as they continue to try and build and lay the foundation for this program, because you're coming off of something that doesn't happen around here very often, right?
Mm-hmm.
Beating a defending national champion just doesn't happen very often. And so you got guys flying high. And then you got Vanderbilt coming to town, who's 0-3. And I was thinking in the back of my mind, yeah, that was the same Vanderbilt team that Missouri, having won five consecutive games, went down and just got manhandled a
yep.
year ago. I thought this was going to be an important week for Coach Drinkwitz and his staff. I think now this is an important 2 weeks. I really do, because you got Florida coming up. again, you've got, you know, are there any hangover effects from being emotionally charged up from beating LSU? Can you be, and I love this phrase, can you be a mature competitor and settle in and go about your business? Or the other side of it is, and this goes back to being a mature competitor, you can't let your guard down. You got to weaken off. Can't let your guard down.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be irresponsible. You got to continue to maintain the standards that you've had as players in terms of knowing that maybe they have to sacrifice some fun to be able to stay healthy and stay on the field. I think this is going to be a kind of an interesting couple of weeks to kind of watch.
Well, let me put it this way, Mike. If they have that mentality, if they stay locked in, Missouri's got a chance to play with Florida, right? 100%. And that's with Kyle Trask playing as well as he is, and Kyle Pitts being an absolute terror for opposing defenses. I mean, thank goodness Ryan Walters has 2 weeks to prepare for that combination, huh? Like, that's a little bit of a blessing in disguise with this week. But even if the game was going to be played this Saturday, I agree with you 100%. You can feel like you're on the top of the world. You defeated the defending national champions. You have to come with that same hunger against Vanderbilt, and if you do, things take care of themselves. Now you have to spread that out over a two-week period and say you have to have that hunger for 2 weeks if you expect to beat Florida. You have to feel like you're never as good as you think you are, and you're never as bad as your worst days, and just continue getting after it and keeping that focus. And if you do that, the result should come. The process-oriented plan that it seems Eli Drinkwitz and company have is going to yield results eventually if everybody sticks to the plan.
We've talked about this not only on this podcast, but certainly I've talked about it with assistant coaches on Tiger Talk, and we do have a show this week. Eric Link, Missouri's special teams coordinator, will be with us. But we've talked about what the coaches see in Eli Drinkwitz. And David Gibbs, I think, phrased it properly the other day, is that he just, big picture, he gets it. Mm-hmm. He just understands big picture stuff. To the point that it's not just about the X's and O's that take place during the 60 minutes of the game. It's about sending the proper messages as soon as the game is over. Hey, Boomer, nobody circles the wagons like Mizzou.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty poignant message sent to a school down Southwest from a recruiting standpoint. Now, we're not going to talk about the individual involved
mm-hmm.
because I don't believe we can on this format.
Yeah, I don't think that's allowed.
Yeah, but I thought that was a how do I say? I just thought that the messaging there was apropos.
It was delivered at
but it also shows the way this guy thinks.
Yeah, it was delivered at just the moment, wasn't it? And anybody who follows that world closely might understand what we're referring to here. The fact that he said it shows that he's not afraid of it.
Not afraid of
the
it. The
fact that he said it shows that he is thinking about it and understands that that is a challenge for him and his goal to take the very best talent from the state of Missouri year in and year out. There is a lot of talent from the Show Me State that right now is plying its trade in Norman, Oklahoma, and good for them. Eli Drinkwitz needs to turn that tide, and he sees that
Indiana and other places around the landscape.
And he sees that as the opportunity to make that message, and he knows somebody out there is going to hear it. I think that is thinking about the big picture. It's taking that opportunity and saying, well, you know that now that I've got you here, and I think it was a wise thing for him to do.
Yeah, you know, the thing that I've always thought about recruiting, one of the things that I don't think kids and their parents or guardians think about, if you're an in-state kid and if you stay at home, this is redundant. I know you're rolling your eyes. If you stay at home, there's a certain amount of celebrity and networking opportunities that are going to follow you for the rest of your life. It's just going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Case in point, Justin Gage played 9 years in the NFL. Justin Gage, you know, recently found a job with a company in St. Louis because people remembered who he was and, you know, and he's going to do great things at HM Risk, I selfishly throw out there in Clayton. So, but I think about, you know, guys that may be on other rosters. And the only time that I think fans and business people think about those kids is when it's brought up in the media. because once they leave, it's out of sight, out of mind.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a kid in the state of Missouri, and if you want to develop a celebrity that's going to build opportunities for the rest of your life, and I get it, everybody thinks the grass is greener on the other side. You stay at home, pretty neat things can happen.
Yeah.
Ask Howard Richards after 30 years of being away.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
He stayed at home and he was a St. Louis guy.
Yeah. When you do that and you have achieved some level of local notoriety, and meaning that in a good way, and then you continue that and you expound upon that and you grow your network. I mean, the sky's the limit. You see it time and time again. And who amongst the Missouri Tigers, Mike, who is a Missouri born and bred product, somebody who is from the Show Me State and went to the state school and excelled on the field, in the classroom, whatever the case may be, who isn't welcome back after, like you said, 30 years? There, not everybody's welcome back with open arms. You are a part of the family forever. And that's the sales pitch. I don't know if you've been having recruiting huddle meetings with Coach Drinkwitz, because that's the pitch, right? That's it right there.
Well, and I think that, you know, we talked about recruiting quite a bit last Thursday, and he's right when he says his program's not for everybody. But they're going to evaluate, and they're going to look and find guys, and they're not going to be afraid. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be afraid to go after kids, you know, that they think can do great things within this program. So, you know, lots of fun stuff. Let's shift a little bit away from football, because I feel compelled that we have to. On the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast, presented by our friends at Shelter Insurance, ask a Shelter agent about how their auto policy now includes roadside assistance. Learn more at shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield. We're your shelter.
Congratulations. You're having a little girl.
At that moment, everything changed. Our hopes and dreams for ourselves were instantly replaced by our hopes and dreams for her. We got life insurance policies from Shelter Insurance, so that regardless of what life throws at us, we'll still be able to provide the world to her.
Visit shelterinsurance.com to find an agent to help you pick a policy that's right for you. Shelter Life Insurance Company, Columbia, Missouri.
We started with COVID. We have to transition to COVID in terms of volleyball.
Mm-hmm.
Because Missouri's volleyball season opener, the back-to-back against Alabama, has now been pushed back because of COVID.
Yeah, and pushed to then a midweek in the next week, which I found interesting because there have been some bye weekends, if you will, built in. But apparently with the COVID-19 situation amongst Missouri's volleyball program, whether it comes to a test or a trace, the decision's been made that, all right, we can go after it just a few days later, essentially. It was going to be scheduled for this coming weekend, the 17th and the 18th, and now it's the 21st and the 22nd. So a little bit of delayed gratification on the start. And we get to see Josh Taylor's volleyball team, which is ranked preseason number 7 in the country by the AVCA, go out and play back-to-back matches against an SEC opponent 4 times this fall, which I think is fascinating to see.
You know, we need to do it at some point in time. We really need to get Josh Taylor on this podcast.
I think we should.
That'd be a really good idea. You know, and since they got to push back, we've got extra time, right? So we can
do
that next week.
It could be a true preview.
What else stands out? Anything else grab your attention this past week?
I wonder. You think the Kansas City Chiefs are in a Super Bowl hangover? You watch much of that game? I watched a little bit of that game.
I didn't. I really didn't. Yeah. No,
they just seemed off. I don't know.
Did they?
A little bit. Well, Patrick Mahomes throws an interception, and that's like the sky is falling, right? And it was damaging. Chucky kind of knew what he was doing. I think that John Gruden was the last Raiders coach to score more than 40 points at Arrowhead, and he's the most recent Raiders coach to score 40 points or more at Arrowhead.
And he had, what, they had lost 7 consecutive games?
I think so, yeah.
Right? Yeah, so... Yeah, no, I didn't watch the game. I mean, yeah. Sunday for me is just kind of a, you know, start working on the next game, which, as you know, I had everything, you know, pretty much in ready to go for Vanderbilt, waiting on what their roster decisions were going to be and what Missouri's 2-deep was going to look like. But, I had selfish time on Sunday.
I think I got to ask you this on behalf of everybody who was on social media and following at Mizzou Radio on Twitter and Mizzou Sports Properties Twitter, and who has watched the call with you and Howard calling 3rd and 4th down in the win over LSU. Did you think about your call, start drinking, folks, before you made it?
I didn't. It just kind of came out. I was thinking Drinkwitz, and, you know, I'd had, like, messaging from people within athletics talking about how concerned they are about getting people back after this year, right? Because, you know, you wonder about being out of sight, out of mind, okay? Fans that either couldn't get tickets or opted not to take tickets or just said, you know, I'm good, let's wait till we have a vaccine or something like that. I think when you have a program like Missouri that you haven't sold out each and every game for, you know, a vast number of years, I think you worry about fans not being in the facility. And so I was thinking about that. I was thinking about, you know, about credibility and the credibility towards the program or for the program that a win like this provides. And so some of those things were kind of going through my mind as that game was unfolding. But in terms of scripted or signed, nah, it just kind of came out. And, you know, then I was worried about, you know, golly, I'm going to get letters from the mothers against drunk driving, you know, and things like that. So
I think everybody understood the turn of phrase involved there.
My wife didn't.
Really?
She said she didn't. She said, and then she like, oh, my God, what is he doing? And then she said, oh, yeah. And then it kind of clicked for her. But, you know, you think back, Matt, from my position at games like that, and literally my position has always been others will judge how the game was called. You just hope to do it justice. Mm-hmm. And that's all you want to do. You want to do it justice. You want to hopefully get it right, but you want to do it justice. Yeah, again, it was neat to be there with our guys. I mean, you know, in the booth, we've got, you know, Howard, but obviously Scotty Cox sits to my left, Matt Weingartner behind us. I need to, and I don't know if you've seen the video, saw what I turned and did, and I don't know if Scotty's sternum was bruised after that, because I drilled him a couple of times. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, but neat moment, absolutely neat moment, something that you're going to remember. And, you know, this weekend without a game, we should promote this, that we're going to flash back to the 2010 homecoming game and the win against then number one Oklahoma with game day making its first ever appearance at the University of Missouri. But, you know, in a conversation with Steve Sowers and with Josh Pell and with others yesterday, you know, what do you do on the, oh, you know, let's figure out a Tiger kind of historical moment to pull up. And part of me is thinking, well, let's play the LSU game again. Because, again, it doesn't happen very often where Missouri's beaten the defending national champs. So, but, you know, the Oklahoma beating number one, you know, that's something that certainly was memorable. And, you know, from the opening kickoff with John McGaffey. So,
yeah. You know that you get to tune in early and get something right off the bat that keeps your attention.
Exactly, yeah.
That's the best part.
Exactly. So, anyway, had enough for today?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, let's do it again next week. Is that all right?
Sounds like a plan.
Because next week we'll be talking about Missouri making its trip to the swamp in Gainesville.
The somewhat full swamp?
Dan Mullen get his way between now and then. Intriguing minds. Wait to find out. This edition, like every edition of the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast, is brought to you by Shelter Insurance. Ask an agent how Shelter's auto policy includes roadside assistance. Learn more at shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield, we're your shelter. For Matt Michaels, I'm Mike Kelly. Our thanks to Steve Sowers. Also, thanks to you for listening to the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast.
This has been Inside Mizzou Athletics with Mike Kelly, brought to you by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.